Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Home ownership is the principal way in which most Americans have been able to build wealth. But that's something that's been difficult to accomplish for many black families. Denied access to housing in certain neighborhoods, as well as access to the credit necessary to buy a home, that was a significant roadblock earlier in our history. And now, with rising home prices, low inventory, and high mortgage interest rates, once again, those families are being priced out. Lack of access and the ability to use home ownership as a wealth builder is but one negative aspect to this reality. But there are those working to change things, and some of them are with us for the hour. Dr. Courtney Johnson-Rose is president of the National Association of Real Estate Brokers. Tacola McCree is the president of the Charlotte Crown Chapter of the National Association of Real Estate Brokers. And Crystal Monique Richardson is an attorney in private practice at Crystal Richardson PLLC, who helps people build estates and wealth for those estates. Good morning and welcome to you all. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. It's radio, so you have to talk. So, Doctor, I'm going to talk with you. You are here because, there was a National Association of Real Estate Brokers Building Black Wealth Tour earlier this month. There's a virtual version of it on April the 13th, which will cover, I think, 93 or 100 different markets throughout the country virtual community building wealth day. What is the goal of all of these meetings around the country?
Yes, thank you so much, Mike, for having NARAB as a part of this important conversation. So the goal of the NARAB Building Black Wealth Tour is two-part. First, it's to inspire and to educate the African-American community on the value and importance of home ownership and building wealth through real estate. The second goal of the tour is to position our organization, our members, which we are called Realtists, as the trusted advisor, as the resource in our communities, so that they know that we are here to help them build wealth with real estate whenever they are ready to start that particular journey. You can learn more about the tour at NARABBlackWealthTour.com. We're coming to 100 cities on April the 13th. We just had a phenomenal event in Charlotte where we had hundreds of African-American families and individuals come to be able to learn about the tour. But we are coming to cities across the country again on April the 13th.
So not everybody is familiar with the National Association of Real Estate Brokers or its mission. So why don't you tell us, Dr. Rose, what that mission is and why you
Thank you so much, Mike, for that question. So the National Association of Real Estate Brokers is the premier network of Black real estate professionals. We were founded in 1947, and we are called Realtists because when we were formed, African-Americans could not become Realtors because of discrimination. So our two founders founded the Realtists, focused on the African-American community and the real estate needs of that community. We have evolved over the years, but our mission still remains democracy and housing. So we do advocacy. We have policy positions. We produce a report every year called The State of Housing in Black America. We produce another report called The Wire that looks at the landscape for African-American women purchasing real estate specifically. And then we create programs with that data designed to increase Black home ownership and increase Black wealth. So, for example, with the State of Housing in Black America report, we noticed two things in particular. Number one is lack of inventory. There's not enough affordable homes that's in the condition and the locations that are needed to meet the demand of African-American buyers. Second thing that we noticed is that there is a 20% decline in mortgage applications amongst African-Americans year to date. There's a 27% decline amongst African-American millennials year to date. So when we look at that, it's not the same rate of African American individuals even applying for loans. We know that there's a lack of consumer confidence. The interest rates are higher, the prices are higher, inventory's low. So all of those things have slowed down the interest and progress and confidence in our community in being able to build wealth through real estate.
Tacola, she's already mentioned some of the things that Charlotte is kind of the poster child for, and that is
Yes.
lack of inventory in general. And of
Unfortunately.
course, everybody's experiencing these higher interest rates. The housing market here is historically low, historically tight, I guess, and it's keeping a lot of people on the sidelines. Talk about Tacola, what you see in the Charlotte market. Are we in a more challenging market than most other places in the country, or we've got average?
We absolutely are, Mike. If you look at some of those studies that are coming out, Charlotte has climbed to number two on the best places to live in the nation. So what does that mean? That means we have people flocking to the Charlotte area for what many feel is affordable, especially if you're coming from the far west, the northeast, where you may sell a home for $1 million and then come here and get something for maybe 700,000, 500,000 and be living comfortably. But that is a price point for African American buyers that may be a reach. So what's happening is the affordable homes, and I put affordable in quotes because affordable is all relative, right? Are being sucked up by investors, by hedge fund companies. And so what's happening is these homes are being purchased in bulk and then re-rented at higher prices. So Charlotte is a market where they call it revitalization, right? Affordability, of course, is a challenge. There's a lot of growth and development, and I'm going to be very honest, and a lot of that is not from people that look like us. We have a lack of homeowner education, which is where Charlotte Crown in this market is really trying to bolster up the education of the African American buyer. And of course, our president has been very, very such a visionary in terms of development. I know she's very humble about what she does, but she is a very successful developer. So she has put in play the Black Developers Academy, where there is education in development across the nation. So those are some of the things that here in Charlotte, we know we aim to do. We are a bit behind the eight ball, but now that we understand from our Sheba report what some of the needs are, we are implementing what her plan is, her E3 plan, here is in Charlotte, so that we can really dial in on what some of those local needs are in this market.
Crystal, there are a lot of contemporary and historical headwinds that Black home buyers face or have historically faced and continue to face for different reasons, which we'll talk about as we go through this. But not only is buying a home a piece of the pie in terms of wealth building, you focus on getting people ready to buy that home because you have to have a little bit of wealth to get in the first place. The state of financial education, I think universally is not as strong as it could be or should be in the 21st century throughout the country, no matter what color you are. But do potential Black homeowners face different problems in your experience?
So I will say that my focus is not only about how do we plan and protect our wealth so that we can do things like purchase homes and so forth, but also thinking about succession planning. What do we do once we have it? Many of my clients, when they come to me, they're thinking about their children and future generations and so forth. And then also our ancestors, many of us have family-owned land that we've inherited that can also be used to maintain our generational wealth. And lots of times we have issues with making sure we have clear marketable title to that property so that we can do things with it. And so, a lot of the focus when it comes to estate planning is also thinking about that succession planning. What do we do with that family-owned property? What do we do with the wealth that we're generating during our lifetime? And then again, we're thinking about if something happens to me, how do I make sure that I have enough wealth to care for myself if I'm incapacitated, as well as thinking about, you know, children and other dependents, other individuals who may be dependent on us, and thinking about, again, if I were to pass on, who would I pass that wealth to? How do I use that wealth to help someone else, maybe with the down payment of a first home or with education or investment opportunities? So there's a lot that goes into estate planning that I think a lot of people just don't think about.
Right. Dr. Rose, your organization, the National Association of Real Estate Brokers, as you mentioned, produces this report every year called The State of Black Housing in America, the latest of which came out last year, 2023, but we're only a couple of months into 2024. Yeah. It shows that African Americans are gaining in significant areas like labor market participation, but mm-hmm. they continue to face substantial obstacles in buying a home. Why?
So the barriers are very complex in terms of Black homeownership. The system, the financing system that we all have to operate in was not designed for the African-American community.
Meaning what? For people who don't understand that.
Yes, meaning FHA, HUD, all of those programs when they were founded in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, was designed for white borrowers. It wasn't designed for the African-American community. So let's give an example, how student loans are calculated in home ownership. So I'm a buyer, I go out, I want to apply for a loan, but because I have a student loan and the UNCF makes a average that the average Black student graduates from college with $41,000 worth of student loan debt versus other students. So I go to qualify for a loan and get a mortgage from a bank or institution. And because I already have an average of $41,000 worth of student loan debt, how that debt to income ratio calculates makes it harder for me to qualify for the home. So now my debt to income ratios is too high to qualify. But systematically in our community, the average Black student graduates with $41,000 worth of student loan debt. So that's an example of that calculation. Credit is another one of the reasons why African Americans don't get approved at the same rate. So it's not about working, because the labor force, as you mentioned, that shows that African Americans are working and they're making income. But the income that I make is not the same as the income of other race groups. Give an example, Black women on average that have a master's degree make about the same amount per year as a white male without a degree. So when you look at the disparity in terms of income, it's hard for that same Black female with a master's degree with student loan debt to be able to compete and qualify for the same type of housing. We utilize credit in our community because there's not institutionalized wealth. So there's not institutionalized wealth. My parents haven't left me an inheritance. So the community tends to be check to check. I'm making less income on average for doing similar jobs, et cetera. So if my tires go out, which is a common thing that happens, as a Black female without institutional wealth or a lot of savings, I utilize credit in order to be able to get my tires so I can still go to work. So now my credit score, my debt to income ratio, all of those things are affected by it. And it affects us when we go to apply for a mortgage.
We have to take a break. This is a very deep and dense problem, which we will explore more fully in a few seconds here, but we're coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about building black wealth through home ownership and some of the difficulties faced by people who want to be a homeowner or even those who have a property and don't know what to do with it when they want to pass it on. We're taking a look at all of that with Dr. Courtney Johnson-Rose, who is the president of the National Association of Real Estate Brokers. They are doing their Building Black Wealth Tour on April 13th. It's a virtual meeting that you can find out more about financing homes, etc., and getting ready to for home ownership and what to do with it if you have one. Tecola McCree is the president of the Charlotte Crown chapter of that organization, and Crystal Monique Richardson is an attorney who helps with estate planning at Crystal M. Richardson PLLC. Doctor, you just gave a very bleak picture of the challenges that many people face when they're trying to get into a home because of all the things you talked about. And of course, that's compounded by centuries of codified discrimination, which was just lifted. People don't realize this. This was just lifted 35 or 45 years ago in the 60s and 70s. So they not only have black individuals been behind the eight ball, the recovery process from that is going to take a very long time, it seems to me. And since home ownership is a key ingredient for most people in building wealth, that just didn't happen for the longest time. Those restrictions that we allude to, and which we'll talk about a little bit more in depth later on, have all dropped off, or so people think.
And yet
the problem persists. So we think that they're gone. They're not. Tell us more about that.
So what we have seen, Mike, is that systematic racism has evolved, and discrimination in housing has evolved. One of the things that we looked at in our WIRE report this year is artificial intelligence, AI, and how AI could be used potentially. We're very conscious of it, potentially in the discrimination. When we look at automated underwriting, which is what most banks and financial institutions utilize, there's still discrepancy in terms of what interest rates are for particular zip codes, what loan level pricing or fees are charged based upon what's called risk. And there are certain factors that go along with that that are characteristics to the Black community. We look at appraisal bias. Appraisal bias is a proven fact that appraisal bias happens. In our communities, you know, a lot of our members of our communities and real estate professionals and appraisers would recommend to Black borrowers, to Black sellers to whitewash your home, to literally take all of your personal pictures down, take all of your artwork down, things that are culturally, you know, part of your home that make home home when you're going to sell your house or to get your home appraised to sell your home, to literally take all of that out of your home to be able to get a fair appraisal value.
I hear what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. But because in selling previous homes that I have lived in, real estate agents have told me, take all of your personal photographs out, take them off the desks, take them off the tabletops, get it off the wall. If you have something, a piece of art that is particularly you like, but people might go, what the? Take that out of here as well, so we can show the home and people can picture themselves living in it. How is that different from what you just spoke about?
Yeah, it is different because the data shows, and I want to highlight a report that HUD put out under the PAVE, P-A-V-E, initiative that shows documented millions of dollars worth of appraisal bias that has happened. Because the appraiser, which an appraisal is an opinion of value from that professional, an appraiser will appraise a home in the Black community, similar square footage, et cetera, and on average, it comes out lower based upon the community, based upon the particular home buyer. We've had it where it's been in the same community, and PAVE, again, has looked at this in detail and shown examples in the same community. They've even had examples, Mike, where it's been the same home. Same home, appraiser shows up, black fam black female opens the door, let the appraiser in. There's you know, pictures and artwork and things of that nature. We do the same home again under this experiment, put a white woman in the home to answer the door, change the pictures out of the families and things of that nature to a white family. And the same home has been appraised thousands of dollars higher when the white family pictures and homeowner was actually there. That's, so it's a fact that this is happening in our communities across the country.
That's a real world example. And we live in a world now where suddenly there are a whole bunch of people who want to just move on. They don't want to talk about this anymore. They think it's all been addressed. The problems have all been addressed. And so that's why I want to bring this up, Crystal. The American Bar Association did a deep dive into the wealth gap issue, and it really puts what they found into perspective. Here's what they say, quote, "The estimated loss of black wealth as a result of enslavement is $14 trillion in today's money. Further, with the emancipation of slaves, the unfulfilled federal promise to compensate freed people with 40 acres and a mule is estimated at $16.5 trillion in loss of wealth for black families." And they get into some of the contemporary challenges facing African Americans as well. They add, "Instead of being a source of wealth accumulation, homeownership tends to be costlier for black households. They pay, on average, 10% more in taxes, while homes in black majority neighborhoods are more likely to be appraised at values 23% below identical homes in majority white neighborhoods." The ABA knows this. The American Bar Association knows this. Do you know, Crystal, of any attempts on their part to lobby for some sort of correction to these problems?
I think, you know, just like the organization here with the realtors or the realist, there's an effort to promote education and advocacy around estate planning, because historically, Black Americans were once viewed as property. Okay, so we weren't able to do estate planning and so forth. And so many of us have either learned from our parents and our parents' parents that we don't need to do estate planning. We're most likely, I would say about 76% of Black Americans do not have a will or a trust. And those are tools that can be used to do things like minimize taxes and make sure that you're preserving your wealth during your lifetime and for future generations. The other, I think, myth or misconception about estate planning in general is that many of us think we don't have anything to pass on. And we're so focused on death that we usually do estate planning as like a near-death experience. You shouldn't be doing estate planning on your deathbed. This is about protecting your assets, again, during your lifetime, well, as well as if something happens to you.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, talk to me about that, because a lot of people, black, white, any ethnic division that you can think of, may think, I don't have anything. I rent my apartment. I have a car, but it's a clunker. I got a sofa and a television set. I've got nothing, so I don't have to estate plan. Explain why that's important, and if you are in that situation, how estate planning helps you.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to understanding and knowing what your assets are going to be at your day to death, I mean, we don't have a crystal ball. We can't look into the future. You may inherit something from an ancestor. And also we're sometimes not considering all of the assets when we look at things in totality. We have things like 401ks, insurance, you know, we've got bank accounts, everything that we own, it has to go somewhere. And those things either can be sold and the proceeds are passed on. Or again, we have inheritance that we've gotten from an ancestor, particularly when it comes to real estate. Most Black Americans that I work with are land rich and cash poor. And so it's really important to understand, once I inherit or own this property, how do I protect it? How can I use it to generate wealth and, you know, care for myself and my family?
Some of the roadblocks, Tocola, are systemic, and I don't know that they were designed to be anti-Black, but they certainly don't help African Americans in some ways. The Brookings Institution says that the U.S. tax system protects accumulated wealth, which creates a barrier to home ownership for lower income, lower wealth households, and that policies like wealth-based refundable tax credits and a living allowance deductible and greater transparency and access to IRS tax data stratified by race could help close the gaps that we're talking about here. Have you heard any discussion about this locally among those who set property tax rates locally? Because we just went through this.
Yeah, we have. And, you know, those are discussions that are some are closed door discussions. Some are, you know, kind of being shared a little more publicly. But that is exactly what some of our policy positions are that we have going on nationally that we are addressing in terms of our, you know, some of the tax credits. Or do we even know they exist? Some of those things that are out there for some of our local homeowners, they don't even know that some of the programs, some of the offerings are existing. So that's where we kind of go back to the education and putting out whenever there is an initiative that comes, trickles down the flow, we have to make sure that we are addressing it with our communities and saying, hey, do you know that this is available to you? And most of the time people are saying, I had no idea that there was money out there for me. I had no idea that there was money sitting here on the table. We have a program here in Charlotte. I'm not sure when it ends, but it's approximately $600 to get your utilities paid. Now, how many people in Charlotte know that that exists? Well, they only know it exists if people like Charlotte Crown Realtists let them know, hey, did you know that this money is out here for you? And most of the time, the answer is no. So yes, all of these things are taking place, but it might be put out there on the internet. It's not widely publicized. And that's part of the issue is that money is out there. It's not being publicized or shared, and then it goes back in the pot and then it's over. So that's kind of where we are in terms of kind of reaching the masses with those initiatives.
Dr. Rose, some of the things that we've been talking about paint a pretty bleak picture, and people may be depressed by even hearing this conversation, and they have reason to be, but there may be a silver lining someplace. Let me start with this. The 2018 report on the wealth gap by Samuel Du Bois Cook Center on social equity reported that there are no actions that Black Americans can take unilaterally that will have much of an effect on reducing the racial wealth gap. While the Harvard Gazette cites studies showing that greater access to higher education can move the needle. But this is coming just as affirmative action programs appear to be decreasing. Do you see a tax on diversity as just another effort to put up roadblocks?
Yes, this is a great question, Mike. So the attack on diversity is something that's very concerning to organizations like NARAB that's focused on building Black wealth. So there's a couple of things that will help us build Black wealth. One is homeownership. It's for any race, it's the number one tool that is utilized to build wealth for Black families, white families, Hispanic families, et cetera. So the majority of Americans' wealth are in their homes. So that's number one. Number two is income. So the income disparity that I talked about earlier has to be addressed in order for the wealth gap to decrease. Third thing is entrepreneurship is a big thing. Our ability to be able to get into high income areas, to have unlimited type of income that comes with owning business is something important. And fourthly is estate planning. And I'm so glad that Attorney Richardson is on to really talk about estate planning and life insurance and how do you pass real estate along. Those are big tools to building wealth. So when you talk about diversity and inclusion programs, when you talk about programs that would help increase minority participation for minority-owned businesses, when you talk about programs that would provide opportunities for Black students and brown students to get scholarships to go to college, when you talk about all those things that would increase income, increase opportunity, increase access to education, increase the ability to earn more when you have a college degree, all of those things are detriments to being able to help build Black wealth and close the actual wealth gap.
Crystal, the National Association of Real Estate Brokers, and they're not alone in this estimate, say that there is a tenfold difference in the wealth of the average white family versus the wealth of the average Black family, according to the National Association of Real Estate Brokers. And this figure varies from study to study, but it's pretty close. White households' average wealth is $250,400, compared to $24,520 for Black families. If you're in that basket of the $24,000 for your whole household wealth, where do you start to build the kind of wealth to become equal to the white families out there? How do you start?
I think everyone needs to start at minimum with at least having a last will and testament. That is absolutely key. And if and when you're able to do more advanced estate planning, such as trust, that can help with minimizing taxes and add additional protections and so forth, do that. But I think having something in place is much better than having nothing. I think it's more costly when you have, you just kind of allow the state laws to come up with your estate plan for you by doing nothing. When you have at minimum a last will and testament, for example, you can do things like waive a bond requirement, which is a barrier in my mind to estate planning in general, because everyone has to have an estate probated. You have to have a personal representative. And the number one requirement in doing that and qualifying is getting that bond. And it's insurance. They do check your credit. And for most Black Americans, again, as we just spoke about some of those barriers, things like credit and just our median income and so forth is differing from our counterparts. And so I think at minimum, having a will that is very clear about where you intend to dispose of your assets, meaning who is in your family that you care about and you want your assets to go to, is very important, and just minimizing that.
There are individual aspects to this, which we've been talking about, but there are also societal implications. And when we come back, I want to talk about that as well. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Black home ownership and building wealth through that, through owning a home, with Dr. Courtney Johnson-Rose. She's the president of the National Association of Real Estate Brokers. Tecola McCree is the president of the Charlotte Crown Chapter of that organization. And Crystal Monique Richardson is an attorney that helps people build wealth through estate planning at Crystal M. Richardson, PLLC. Before I talk about the societal implications of this, Tecola, it seems to me that the average person in the country, the biggest part of their wealth is the home that they own, and they build wealth by buying up. You buy a house, it appreciates, you sell it, you buy another one, it appreciates, you sell it, and that's how it's been done over years and years and years. But if you're in a group that's been behind the eight ball for so long, and when you are facing some of the things that we've already talked about, like higher interest rates when you go to get a loan because of a system not designed for you and your reality, when appraisers come in and because it's in the Black neighborhood, they give you $25,000 less, or they appraise it for $25,000 less. How do you overcome those things and build that wealth? You're in the field every day. How do you do it?
Well, that is a great question, Mike. It's a difficult task. There was an example that was given. It's like starting a race. And, you know, when you have a group of people that have been running for 400 years and you're still at the finish line, it's almost like a defeatist kind of situation. How do we do this? I am always going to harp on education. That is the biggest factor that kind of blocks people from knowing what their rights are, you know, what they're entitled to do. We are at higher interest rates now, so a lot of people are just scared to do anything, knowing that they might get an 8% rate versus they might have a 5% now. So buying up may not be the answer, as you just discussed. It may be stay put. We have a lot of people that may fall on hard times and may have pulled that equity out of the home, you know, and maybe have used it for hard times, such as the ones we're in now, where food is higher, where all the prices are much, much more exorbitant than they were. So what we're doing now, and Dr. Rose did speak to towards NAREB, and I'm going to speak towards what realtists in particular are doing. We do have our pillars. We do have our state of housing in Black America, and those pillars are faith-based and civic engagement. So we are meeting our communities at the churches, right? When you have anyone in government and they want votes, where do they go? They go to the Black church, right? So we go to our churches and we empower our communities that way. Civic engagement, we have our policy positions like Dr. Rose was talking about. We have very strategic goals here that we're facing and that the National Association of Real Estate Brokers and Charlotte Crown in particular are working on the forefront to address. We have diversity, inclusion, and small business. That's another pillar. There are initiatives out here for small minority businesses that most people don't know are out there. We also have our multi-generational wealth and wealth building, which Attorney Richardson has spoken to very eloquently. We've got to teach our communities how to start, because most of the time people are out there just feeling like they're on an island alone. That's what we're here for. And then, of course, we have our government relations and our advocacy, which Dr. Rose was just in Washington, D.C. a few days ago. So we are on the front lines trying to help elevate the communities in all of those areas. That's how we start.
Dr. Rose, we are living at a time when it seems in an America where it's about me. It's not about us. It's not about group welfare or working together because we're all in this together. It's about I got mine, you get yours, and good for you if you don't. So in that world, it's difficult to see why this matters to anybody who's already got theirs. But it does. According to CNN commentator and author Van Jones, he says that when it comes to home ownership, it isn't just about owning a home. It is about owning part of the future. He says we need to own the future in this totality. We need to be able to stabilize our communities, own our communities, bring proper education for the 21st century into our communities. There's a lot in that statement, but it comes down to having a stake in the community, which gives a sense of community, it gives stability, it increases safety. Do I have that right, Dr. Rose?
Definitely so. So a couple of things I want to mention here, Mike, and that is first that stats show that the gross domestic product of this country would go up. I was just looking for that particular stat. But in order for our economy to keep moving and to stay strong, we have to look at addressing the wealth gap, because you have to look at the population numbers. You have to look at where the population is actually moving to. And it's in a majority, minority type of setup. I live in Houston, Texas. Houston is one of the first major cities in the country to be a majority minority city in terms of the population of Houston. It is majority African American and Hispanic. So when we look at income levels and we look at education and we look at wealth and we look at the future of this country, one of the things that's going to keep our country strong, thriving, and moving forward economically is going to be looking at how do you ensure that everyone who lives here has a chance and has an opportunity to build wealth and to be able to sustain their families. So it's a greater issue. In addition to that, stats also show that children that grow up in households where their parents own the home tend to do better in school. They have better behavior. Stats show that homeowners are more connected to their communities. They're more likely to vote. They're more likely to go to church. They're more likely to be involved in other civic activities. So home ownership and the opportunity to build wealth in this country has so many other intrinsic benefits other than just financial benefits. It really is what plants you in this country, is having that opportunity to build wealth and have the American dream, which is your own home. So there's a lot of other benefits in addition to the financial benefits, but just financially, if we stop there, it's something that's important to this overall economy.
The challenges that we're talking about actually began probably 600 years ago, maybe longer. The State of Housing Report by the National Association of Real Estate Brokers has blamed the Black Codes that began in the colonial period, the slave codes passed after the country was founded, the Jim Crow laws that were passed after Reconstruction, and myriad laws that were passed during the Great Depression. It provided land and housing and benefits to white people, but denied them to Black people, people of color. But then along comes the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, the Housing Act, and one would think, well, that solved the problem. Crystal, according to this report, that's not so. How is that possible? Why, if the legal restrictions have dropped, are we still breaking laws somehow preventing people from having access? Unmute yourself. There you go.
I think, you know, it just has changed form to more covert ways. And I think when it comes to discrimination, it's more difficult to prove because there's not these covert methods of, oh, I denied you because you were Black. But like Dr. Johnson just eloquently spoke about the different studies and the statistics that are out there, we know that these are still issues that many of us face today. I'm not a civil rights attorney. I can't speak to, you know, all of the laws in that way, but I do know that everything that you just named, from Jim Crow laws to redlining and what I spoke about earlier about historically Black Americans being enslaved and being considered property, has created barriers when it comes to estate planning and preserving, their wealth. As we think about how do we move forward. And I do think that that's absolutely perpetuated the racial wealth gap here in America. And so how do we move forward to not necessarily catch up, but how do we get to a place where Black Americans are also enjoying that intergenerational wealth? And I do think that estate planning is one of the key tools to be able to do that. And that can look very different from person to person. And I think I want to be clear that estate planning is not just about creating a will. It's a number of things, from retitling your assets to getting a power of attorney to working with your, you know, tax professional, your certified financial planner, your attorney, making things work specifically for you to preserve your assets that will care for you during your lifetime and your family if something were to happen to you.
Some of the problems or the barriers that people face, Black folks face when they're trying to buy a house, are due to zoning regulations that came about, innocently or not, in the early part of the 20th century, which prevent certain kinds of housing to be built on increasingly shrinking amounts of land, supplies of land. Charlotte Tacola has been trying, I think, to take steps to address that. They changed their zoning regulations recently with the 2040 comprehensive plan and the unified development ordinance that codifies what the plan aspires to be. Do you think that these changes will help this situation that we've been talking about in any way?
Thank you, Mike. I think the conversations are happening, which is a start. I try not to be all doom and gloom, but I do like to talk real talk, right?
That's why I'm
a realtist, and we're on Charlotte Talks, so we're going to have some real talk. I do think the conversations are happening, Mike. So I do want to place that out there. There are still CCNRs, and I don't like to use acronyms without people knowing, covenants, codes, and restrictions, which have some very divisive language in them still in 2024.
Hold on.
That is something that we're still looking at.
For some reason, we're losing your audio, Tacola. I'm not sure why. And there we go. Now you're
How about
on
now?
Go ahead. Yes.
Are
go
you
ahead.
Okay?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know where we were, but covenants, codes, and restrictions is what I was speaking of.
Right.
Yes. We have our 2024 plan. Charlotte Crown, we have since 2019, we've been talking about 2040 plan. We've been looking at UDOs, which are alternative ways of living, where, you know, you can kind of have different ways in which Black homeowners or even other homeowners with generational living can start to team up and kind of minimize some of those costs. So I will say this, Mike, I will say the conversations are coming to fruition. We are talking about ways in which we can bring things to light, because I would say that, yes, these restrictions, it's a little more covert, but it's still here. It is still here. And there's still a lot going on that's restricting the Black community from being homeowners and planning for generational wealth.
I have about 4 minutes left, and I want to talk about two things we have not discussed that I think that are important, Crystal, and something that's more prevalent in the Black community than in the white community. There are Black homeowners who technically have lived in their homes or have owned pieces of land, and it's been in their family for generations. That land has been handed down without accompanying documentation, either because it doesn't exist, because it came from a time period before that documentation was readily available, it has been lost, or it wasn't filed because people distrusted systems that were set up to work against them. So they didn't deal with that. That, I would think, presents problems when you go to sell a home or hand it down to your descendants, or when these investors come in and offer you really good money for a piece of property, but you don't have any paper to show them. Talk about that quickly.
Yes. So I think what you're talking about is heirs property or family owned property. The issue is that as each generation passes on, the number of owners gets larger and larger. So you could have a parcel of property that has 50, 100, 200 owners, and then we can't ascertain who all of these individuals are. And we have a issue with clearing title, and it makes it harder to pass on that property to future generations. That I do believe we've lost millions of dollars in heirs property. There's been lots of studies about the amount of money lost due to not being able to have clear title. And so working with an attorney to understand how to succession plan, how to clear up that title, how to pass that on. And again, as the generations go on, many of us get detached from the land. We don't have that ancestral connection that some of our older family members might have. And so it creates barriers. It leaves the property vulnerable to tax foreclosures, real estate speculators coming in, purchasing one person's fractional interest, forcing everyone into court. And then you've got all this legal fees and so forth, trying to defend your real property interest into that real property. And so I could talk about that. That's a whole nother segment. And I just quickly tried to hit on some key points about the issues with that vulnerable form of ownership, which is known as heirs property.
And that is why people hire attorneys like you to help them with their estate planning. Doctor, one of the goals of the nationwide Building Black Wealth Tour is to help people understand, and these are your words, I believe, the power of real estate. But how do you help them attain it? Given all the things that we've talked about, are there solutions for some of these barriers?
Yes, and thank you for that question, Mike, and thank you again.
I have about a minute left. Go ahead.
Okay, so our report shows that there are 2 million mortgage-ready Black borrowers. That means they have the income and they have the credit to be able to purchase. What they're lacking is education and confidence. So this tour is about them. This tour is about finding them, educating them about the opportunities in homeownership.
And it's a virtual tour. It's on April 13th. So how do people find out? How do they get connected to that virtual tour?
N-A-R-E-B, NARABBlackWolfTour.com. NARABBlackWolfTour.com.
Dr. Courtney Johnson-Rose is the president of NARAB, the National Association of Real Estate Brokers. Dakota McCree is the president of the Charlotte Crown Chapter. And Crystal Monique Richardson is an attorney at Crystal Richardson PLLC. Thank you all for the hour.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.